IPSE leads the way.
IPSE.
One system, personnel, and pay.
IPSE.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the IPSE podcast, where we give you updates on what's going on with the program, and there's a lot. I'm Colonel Allie Pruitt, the IPSE Functional Management Division Interim Director. I'm excited to have the new director on the next podcast, and I'll be serving as the host of today's episode. Today, I'm joined by Captain Josh Lieb, the IPSE FMD Application Security Lead, and CW3 Carrie Sellen, IPSE's Reserve AppSec Lead. What a powerful team this is. Thanks for being here, you guys, and please introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about you.
Once again, thank you for having me on the podcast, ma'am. As Colonel Pruitt mentioned, I serve as the Application Security or AppSec FMD lead. In this role, I manage the system's access request process. Additionally, and the new functionalities are introduced into the system, I coordinate their proper alignment within our category and subcategory framework. My passion is delivering a product that not only enhances the human resource capabilities, but reduces the burden of work on each soldier.
That's fantastic, Josh. I know that you have other passions and hobbies. Why don't you tell the crowd a little bit about those?
Yes, ma'am. So one of my major passions I have is the sport of golf. Some may or may not consider that a sport, but I specialize in the pre-1930s realm, so all the old hickory golf, wood-shafted golf clubs, and I travel around the world playing tournaments where everybody's dressed up as 1900s golfers.
I love it. That's great. Chief, I'm excited to hear more about you.
Ma'am, it is such an honor to be here as well and to be with both of you. You guys are legends in the system. So I get to serve with Captain Lieb as the Reserve AppSec Lead. So I get to ensure that the reserve interests are built into our access protocols across all three components. I truly am passionate about moving us towards this one system for all that we call IPSE and helping the field reimagine how to do our legacy processes while securing the right access so that they can accomplish their missions.
That's fantastic, Chief. And I love how you pointed out one system for all. I really feel like over the lifetime of IPSE, we have unified our approach and we talk less about compo separation and more about compo inclusion, which makes me really excited about this upcoming season for IPSE. We are digging deep and working really hard on some system subsumption, MUPs, AORs, and RLAS, and I know that hits the heart of a warrant officer. But today, we're here to talk about AppSec, and truthfully, before I joined this program, I didn't know a whole lot about application security, and what I did know really was helpful in falling asleep at night more than getting me excited and passionate about the program. But that has since changed thanks to the two of you and your other teammates. Specifically, I'd like to break down how subcats, short for subcategories, those roles and the access management work we've done across the system, because you guys have done a lot. And it's changing in the field as well. I also want to give our listeners an idea of what proper role assignments are and why they matter, not just for access, but for protecting data integrity and ensuring pay accuracy and maintaining audit compliance. Data accuracy is so important to our warfighters and their families and our national security. Ensuring pay accuracy is something that's deep in my heart as a customer-based lieutenant and captain on the brigade in the battalion S1 floor. And maintaining audit compliance is great stewardship of those resources that Congress and our Army senior leaders provide us. So let's dig into it. InfoSec should be a priority for every soldier, civilian, and contractor within the Department of War. This is in order to protect access to sensitive information. It's restricted to a mission essential need to know utilizing the least privileged user guidance we previously discussed. Captain Lieb, to start us off, what recent changes have we made and why have we made them?
Yes, ma'am. So in the last 6 months since I've been on the program, I've made multiple major updates, not only to the physical system, but the operating procedures that are outlined within the Access Request Management Guidance Memo found in the IPSA Help section. Other major system internal updates have been the addition of the leader subcategory developed specifically for the platoon level leaders to do their daily tasks, and the addition of the ROSEC validator structure currently for World ROSEC, future for all ROSECs. All these updates are outcomes of one of two things. Firstly, we are updating the system to move away from the go live IPSA, where we needed to get all the players into the system as fast as possible. This allowed for more of an open system to now more of the sustainment system, where we begin to tighten up our access to those that have a real need to know. And then secondly, we have been directed by the Army audit as a whole to make adjustments to our provisioning process, limiting the access to critical information for the roughly 1.1 million users across IPSA.
Wow, that's a lot. But let's dig deeper and explain AppSec, or application security. You did a great job of walking me through this as we made those changes. What do we mean by subcat and roles within IPSA?
So IPSA system security operates off of a trickle-down provisioning process that starts broad and narrows down as you get to your work type. For example, we start with a broad category. That category, let's say, is HR professional. Within that category, we have multiple subcats, and in this example, we're going to use HR supervisor, which is normally your NCOIC of your Battalion S1 shop. So we know that I'm a Battalion S1. I have HR supervisor. The last step to this is understanding what the roles are. Those are those little checkboxes that appear underneath the subcategory. And those ensure that you can complete a task associated to that subcat without being over-provisioned.
Great. And over-provisioning is just meaning that I have more access and resourcing than I really need for my specific duties and responsibilities, right?
That is correct, ma'am.
Awesome. I know the field will appreciate that explanation. Chief, I'm a major fan of warrant officers, and I know that this technical conversation just gets you fired up and you're lit up like a Christmas tree. Can you help us better understand why access management is such a critical part of running a system like IPSA?
Of course, ma'am. And you're right. I love this part of my job. So access management, it is critical to IPSA because it governs all of our unified HR workflows for all three components. So assigning the right tools and the accurate access levels ensures uninterrupted daily personnel processing. So whenever we give accurate and timely HR actions, such as promotions, awards, and pay updates, which we all love, it helps directly boost the morale of our troops and the productivity of our missions. Proper access management ultimately ensures that the soldiers are free to focus on their primary mission rather than looking at the administrative or financial concerns of their job.
Great explanation. How are roles assigned within IPSA, and who is responsible for approving them?
Yes, ma'am. So like I mentioned earlier, roles are given at the subcat level and come in two forms. The first form is the auto-provisioned, and the second form is the manual provisioning. The auto-provisioned roles are the ones that you see that are pre-checked and grayed out. They are the base foundation for that subcat to function. The manual roles are the additional functionality available within that subcat based on the end user's job requirements. Ultimately, roles are reviewed by the supervisor in the S1 pool and then validated by the approval authority for that subcat.
Great explanation. Chief, I'm thinking back to my days as a commander and all the maneuver commanders I've worked with over my career, and access to information, and there's always a hunger for more information. What's the difference between having access to view information in the system versus taking action in the system?
And that's a good question, and we get that all the time. So the primary difference is going to be that the view-only accesses, such as HR data user, it allows you to just read personnel data and pull reports, which could be necessary for specific jobs. where the actioning access, such as the HR professional, it allows users to execute, modify, or approve system transactions. We have the subcats delineated to enforce the principle of least privilege, which you guys were talking about earlier. And it just means that personnel are receiving the minimum system access required to perform their authorized duties. By ensuring the users have the correct subcats, we can ensure that the users have only the access they need to complete their duties.
That's a great explanation. And I know our auditors look for that. I'm also wondering, what are some ways incorrect roles can lead to pay or entitlement issues?
This would be an example of the overprovisioning or lack of training. An example of overprovisioning would be giving an S1 user the commander subcat so that they're able to approve the basic allowance for housing or BAH recertifications, or other entitlements that may have adverse effects on soldiers without the proper approval level, leading to future debtness or underpayment, causing soldier issues.
All right. How do we mitigate that through the validator structure in the system?
For this, we have placed the ownership structure that is reviewed by the supervisor and the S1 shop to validate need to know and then validated by the proper subcat level validator to confirm the correct roles were selected. But ultimately, the owner of the access granted is at the compo heads at HRC, NGB, and USARC that outline how their respective compos should grant access to the users at the field level.
Thank you. Chief, I'm thinking about the digital world and how much access we have for soldier data and 1.1 million users in the system and on the system. How does IPSA protect soldier data through a roles-based access?
Great question, ma'am. So IPSA protects the soldier data through the role-based access control, which is your access request. And what that really boils down to is three main principles. The first principle is what we were going to call granular permissions. Think of each assigned role in IPSA like a key. That key unlocks the exact viewing or processing capabilities required for a user's day-to-day duties and absolutely nothing else. The second principle is the principle of least privilege, which we've spoken about a few times so far. By being selective about which of these roles we grant, the system ensures that personnel are only accessing the soldier data necessary for their specific authorized actions. If you don't need it for your job, you don't have the role for it. And then third, and arguably most critical principle, is leadership oversight. Your supervisors and validators play an essential role in data security here. They review and approve every single access request. Their sign-off ensures that the permissions being granted strictly align with the user's actual operational requirements within that unit. They are the gatekeepers ensuring the system works correctly as intended.
Josh, I'm just thinking about how much work we've put into safeguarding the program and safeguarding the data on our soldiers. Can you describe for the listeners what safeguards are in place to prevent unauthorized actions?
Yes, ma'am. We have two systems in place. The first is the segregation of duty, SOD, and the second is the roles conflicts. Both serve very specific jobs. The SOD says if you do one given function, you can't do another. An example of this would be I cannot be a commander, initiate an action, and be the final approver. Example of a SOD. A role conflict says that you can't have edit roles, for example, the DD-93, and be the CAC pay office and approve the payments off that DD-93. Both of these are safeguards built into the system to prevent accidental and purposeful manipulation of critical information by a single person.
Great answer. Chief, I'm looking at you. I feel like we've changed the paradigm of human resources and how we teach and train our human resource professionals. What are some best practices for S1s, warrant officers, and approvers when requesting, assigning, and reviewing roles?
Ma'am, the proper access requests matter to all of us, the S1s, the senior warrants, and approvers, and honestly, the Army as a whole, because granting the correct access prevents workflow stalls, allows for audit readiness, and enforces our data security. They should take the time, all of them, to understand what each role gives access to. Ensure the proper people have the correct access to accomplish their mission. Over-provisioning and under-provisioning both cause issues with timeliness and proper approval authority abilities. Ensuring each access request is right-sized allows for the proper flow of paperwork processing, allowing for personal actions to occur in a timely manner.
That's spot on. Wise words from an incredible warrant officer. Josh, what should leaders be doing to ensure their units have the right access and only the right access?
Yes, ma'am. So this is a major push we're pushing to the field, not only through the access guidance memo, but through social media posts and others. But leaders should be reviewing the mission requirements, functionalities of the subcats, and the roles that they're provisioning based on the infographic provided in the help files and the echelon that they work in. Looking at the recertifications closely to ensure that the access a user did have is still accurate and to the mission priority.
All right, that sounds like a tool for success. Chief, what are the most common access-related issues that you see and hear about?
I have two very common access-related issues I see every day almost. So either the users are over or under provisioned, which both of those cause errors and should not occur. Either the wrong approval levels are given or the inability to fully do their job. We did create a subcat infographic. It's found in the help menu, and that using that guide should help right size everybody's access. The other is more of a misconception. They think that having Compo 1, 2, and 3 soldiers assigned to their unit requires a row-level security classification, or the row set class, to see all three Compo's records, such as world access. The truth is, the row set class is assigned to the soldier's arrived assignment in IPSE. If they are not assigned to the unit you have access to view, the issue is the assignment, not the row set. Fixing the assignment not only fixes the row set class, but also fixes any workflows issues that unit may also be having.
Chief, that's spot on, and I can't tell you how many times I've gotten that phone call or email over my tenure at IPSE. How will access management continue to evolve as IPSE builds functionality?
Yes, ma'am. So IPSE Access will continue to evolve with the Agile framework. We continue to add functionality, and that requires us to modify how the page looks and operates to meet those new requirements of the future enhancements, specifically focusing on how we can improve the user experience and simplifying the process for the initiators, S1 pools, supervisors, and validators.
What I'm taking away from that, Josh, is as a HR pro, I need to be flexible, adaptable, and tied in with the learning tools, visual guides, and the user guide at IPSE.
Yes, ma'am. So continually updating yourself with the products that are provided by the IPSE team on the training side and the help file side is going to be critical to being adaptable and successful with IPSE in the future.
All right, Josh, that leads me to another question. How would you address concerns from the field about changes to AppSec and Access? And right after Josh, I'm coming to ask you the same question, Chief.
Yes, ma'am. So I would say the majority of our complaints is the consistent change to the system. As soon as we learn it, you change it. It's the most common quote we see. I want listeners to understand and hear that as an AG officer, I understand the frustration and understand the office meetings you receive with your first sergeants, your commanders, your platoon sergeants, and platoon leaders when the system changes and it's not the way it was yesterday. I want you to ensure everybody understands that the Agile software development process means that we release the minimal viable product, then take the feedback the force gives us to update the functionality continuously to meet those needs of the current Army. And that the updates are not developed in a bubble. By IPSE personnel such as myself, we conduct numerous meetings and demos with field users and stakeholders prior to the upgrade going into the system.
Great point, Josh. And that brings me to a side note. Have you seen our new videos on the agile process and minimum viable product?
I have seen your videos, and I 100% agree with the message that they give out and how that puts together everything. You start off with the basic car, and as you upgrade that, you get to what we have, you know, the Lexuses and so forth. So it's critical to understand how that agile workflow works and be able to explain it to your units and your leaders.
Absolutely. If I was in the field in a battalion or brigade S1, I would put that up as an info commercial in a command and staff or something to help my leaders understand what minimum viable product is.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Chief, here's your chance.
First of all, I want to say I've seen the videos too, and it's helped so much explain to people why we put out a product and they're like, this doesn't do 100% of what I want. And so I want people to go to know that we're encouraging them to go watch these videos too. It's not just for us, it's for them. So that they understand better why the system looks the way that they do. But I also want to tell the people, like, we listen to their concerns. I'm on social media. I watch the team's messages. I will reach out to you directly on social media and private message you and say, could you tell me more about what you're seeing? Because I'm going to recognize that we do have some valid system defects, but many of our access gripes are actually misunderstandings of the ESA design. So by working with you directly, whenever I reach out, I'm hoping to turn frustrated users into subject matter experts so that they can go out, they can go out and train their units and their buddies as well. So also, for those that complain about CRM, we get your CRM tickets. Like, if you put in there that you're doing a CRM ticket and you specifically choose you're doing an enhancement idea, it comes directly to us. We read those. So we need you to continue putting in your CRM tickets, your bug reports, your enhancement ideas. All of those things highlight blind spots that we might miss at our echelon, and they drive real system updates. Ultimately, we ask that you meet us halfway. Frustration is understandable, but success requires utilizing the resources we provide. We have the ELM, which is the Enterprise Learning Module or Management Module, which is all of your UPKs. That's where you did all of your training at. We've got job aids upon job aids. We are constantly creating new job aids. We've got the user manual. We have our official support teams channels. We have our social media. We listen to everything, and we try to communicate as widely and strongly as we can to the field to help build a better system for all of our components.
I love the passion and energy put behind those words, Chief, because I really do believe everyone on the program wants the field to succeed with this powerful tool that they have at their fingertips. I'm appreciative of the two of you every day for what you teach me and the daunting work that you take on, not only for our human resource professionals, but for every soldier and leader out there using IPSE. I can't thank you enough. And to be brave to come on here and do a podcast. Your insight is invaluable, not just to our listeners, but to the entire field. So I'm hoping that a listener shares this podcast with someone else. Share it with a friend. It'll be a gift. Before we wrap this thing up, I'd like to pose a question to both of you. What is the one thing listeners should remember about IPSE roles and security?
Yes, ma'am. And thank you for having me on the podcast. AppSec is a huge piece of the system, and having the capability to come out here and talk about it is amazing. So thank you for having us. My one thing would be, IPSE is a growing system. What we have today is not what we will have tomorrow. We need to be adaptive and agile in our AG craft. We are a complex HR system that we expect you to understand the capabilities. And to do that, we expect you to use the help menu, the training aids, the infographics, everything that we have provided you to be able to understand your AG craft and disseminate that information down through your commands. All of this is, to say, critical to success. And again, ma'am, thank you for having us on the podcast.
Thanks, Josh. Over to you, Chief.
Ma'am, I also want to thank you for inviting me on this podcast. Similar to you, AppSec was definitely not my focus. One of my favorites came on IPSE, but the longer I learned IPSE, the more I realized how absolutely important the access and the AppSec portion of IPSE was. So with that stated, I also want to leave the listeners a reminder that too much access is just as bad as not enough access. So make sure that you find that sweet spot for your unit, for your particular mission, and always continue to check the help menu for more job aids and guidance as the system continues to grow and change.
I love our library of job aids. I shamelessly am proud to say that I pull those things up on the daily basis, not just to check in the quality, but to use them as a growing learning user. Getting the right access is critical, not only for doing my job efficiently and effectively, but for everyone. And we all hold the responsibility of protecting soldier data. We encourage soldiers and leaders and human resource professionals to regularly review access needs, follow our best practices, share your own best practices, and work through the proper channels when changes are needed. Just like you said earlier, Chief, we welcome the feedback. I'm excited about what's coming up in the next month or two for IPSE, and I'm excited to be here in the National Capital Region as we celebrate our nation's 250th birthday. What are you looking forward to, Josh?
I'm headed over to Ohio. I'm going to spend the weekend with my grandparents and my aunts that I haven't seen in some time. So it'll be good fellowship weekend.
Maybe play a little golf and share some ROSEC AppSec with your teammates.
Definitely play a little golf. That'll be happening.
Excellent. Chief, how do you plan to celebrate our nation's birthday?
Oh, all of my children are married and older. And so what we've decided this year is we're actually going to go play pickleball and have a huge picnic and just celebrate each other, celebrate our freedom, celebrate our nation's prosperity and ability to have lasted 250 years from this constitutional experiment written by farmers and just everyday people like you and I.
That's great, Chief. A little pickleball, a little bit of family fun. I love it. There's so much that I'm excited to celebrate and see how our team enjoys their Independence Day weekend. I am very happy and excited to welcome Colonel Lee Backlars to the program. He'll wrap up his time at National Defense University next week and be a graduate. Go Tigers! And he will come to the program ready to lead and engage and take IPSE where our Army needs it. Thank you so much, and happy 4th of July.
Soldier, right job, right on time.
24/7, 365.